This episode of Shameless is in collaboration with Call Time on Melanoma, a not-for-profit initiative for sun-smart women.
It's my life now. I have lymphedema. You can see it. It's there. I go to hospital all the bloody time. So when Alexander did come along and it got to that stage where it was like, I'm falling in love with him and like, we need to have a really big conversation, he was the angel that I was waiting for, as my parents now say. And I remember we were both sitting on a bed in Venice and I talked for, I think, 2 hours. I just had so much to say. And then after I'd finished speaking, he grabbed my face and he just goes, I'm not going to go anywhere.
Hello and welcome to this In Conversation episode of Shameless. Today we're being joined by a person who has influenced Zara and I more than any Instagram influencer or YouTube vlogger ever could. Her name is Natalie Fornasia and she has 839 Instagram followers. Your eyebrows might be raised right now and you might be wondering how a normal Sydney girl with a normal social media following could ever be so influential. Well, last year, Natalie sat down with birdie.com.au for a story titled, I'm 24 and living with advanced melanoma. This is my story. Natalie's words and insights in that interview and story were what informed our very last segment of Shameless in 2018 and what pushed Zara, actually, to change her own relationship with suntanning forever. Today, we sit down with Natalie, who is now 25, but is also still grappling with her stage 4 cancer diagnosis. We talk about friendship, about love, and what you can do to help protect your skin and spread the word. Here's Natalie. Natalie.
Hi.
Welcome to Shameless.
Oh my God, hello.
We have been wanting to get you on the show since the end of last year, when a lot of our listeners might remember we did a segment on your story that launched the Call Time on Melanoma campaign.
Yes.
And since then, we got so many messages.
That's
about
insane.
That.
Yeah, honestly, once I found out that you guys had like featured a little excerpt of my very long story, I was overwhelmed. The amount of messages that I got that were like, Natalie, I heard you on Shameless. They were talking about you. I was floored. And from that, everything's just grown. And to this day, like, I'm still flabbergasted by, like, what's happened.
Well, I think, and we said this before we jumped on the microphones really briefly, that we on these In Conversation episodes are always interviewing what we consider influential people. So yep. We're interviewing influencers and media personalities and reality TV stars, whatever.
Yep.
People who have really big audiences. But I actually see you as a huge influencer because the story that you told to birdie.com influenced Zara and I greatly. You being open and honest about what you've been through, I think, influenced many people. So if anything, you're like the old school OG influencer.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
oh
it's
my
like,
God.
A, like a real life campaign. And you're the reason that I did my New Year's resolution, which Michelle will confirm I have stuck to.
Oh, she's been great. She smells like fake tan
all like fake
the time.
I all the time, but I haven't been in the sun.
Hey, but that's a good thing.
Exactly.
It's a good thing.
We usually start every episode in the same way. But with you, we wanted to do it a bit differently and mix it up because okay. I think in your interview with Birdie last year, you said when it comes to cancer, I know people say, I don't know what to say and that people don't ask you how you are.
Yes.
So how are you?
Oh, that's so lovely. I'm good. Today, I'm actually really good. Like really good. It's a beautiful day and I've just been so excited knowing that I was going to be interviewed. So all day, I've been a bit jittery, but honest to God, like, I'm really good today. So thank you very much for asking.
The question that we normally start with, I'll shoot you that now. What are you reading, watching, or listening to at the moment?
Oh, what am I watching? I just started watching Our Planet, the David Attenborough new Netflix. Honestly, that's, like, crazy. Made me feel all the feels. There was, like, a story about how it's all got to do with climate change and, like, how we can, like one little change has a massive domino effect. And there was this like little story about walruses and how like they're having to get space and oh my God, they were like falling from heights and they're all just dying. So it's not pleasant, but it's eye opening. So yeah, that's really great. Like get on it.
So where's that Netflix?
On Netflix. Yeah.
Do you listen to podcasts very much?
I do. What have I been listening to? I listen to my friend Alison Rice's Offline, the podcast.
Ah, I didn't know yes. You guys were friends.
Yeah, well, I was her intern. This is how this all happened. I was intern for Alison.
Wow. See, we've never met Alison Rice, but we've kind of DM'd back and forth about podcasting.
Oh, she is, like, amazing. I love her to bits. And there's a new podcast that my other friend just started called The Modern Woman. So, yeah, and you guys, obviously.
That's right. You really don't have to be polite.
Oh, no.
Natalie, before we get too deep into the cancer stuff and the sickness stuff, we actually want to know more about you as a person.
Okay.
So for a little hot second, let's pretend that the cancer isn't there.
Yep.
That's not a thing.
Yep.
Can you tell us a bit about Natalie Fornasia, the 24-year-old?
25.
25 now. Me too.
Grandparents over here.
We've both had a birthday since we last spoken.
Yeah.
So tell us about you, the 25-year-old with a German boyfriend.
Yes,
what do you love
German
about
boyfriend.
Life? What are your passions and your interests?
Oh, let's see. I would say I love reading. Huge reader. Love to write. Studying journalism at the moment, currently on hold, but going to be a journalist one day, finally going to get that piece of paper. I love nature, love being outside, and I have a zest for life that I think is unique, aside from cancer and everything else.
Mm.
But yeah, I just really love being alive.
Where does that zest for life come from?
I think it just comes from knowing that, I guess, it kind of ties into the cancer thing, but like just knowing that life is so precious. So waking up every day and being grateful that you have a day ahead of you, I think. And that's, to me, is like something that I really take on board and like enjoy. So, yeah, you have shit days, which is fine. But always, it's always great to know that the next day it's a fresh start.
What does that look like on a day-to-day basis? Does it mean, it can it be as simple as getting out of bed that day and not wallowing, or are you an adventurer? What do you like to do?
I would say for me, it would be just being able like to get up out of bed. That's a good start. Like, yeah, that's a great start to be able to like get up at a normal hour as well.
Mm.
And I guess it's just adventuring to an extent. Like, I love to travel. Like, I cannot wait until my treatment's finished to leave Australia again. And I guess just being, I love my family. Like, my family is like my rock, especially my dad, like huge. And yeah, I enjoy being. Yeah, just really simple.
What was your childhood like?
Oh, my childhood was loud. So I have an Italian dad and a Spanish mom.
Ooh.
So loud, full of food, lots of family, and being loved. Yeah, and having fun.
That really must be where the zest comes from, that if you were always kind of like this, that this isn't a newfound sort of persona trait, that it was always there.
Yeah, it's always been there.
Do you have siblings?
I do. I have a younger brother.
Do you guys get along?
Yeah, we do. He's what? He's 23 now. So he's a normal 23-year-old guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know one. Yeah. I know some. What did you know of cancer growing up? Did it touch your family very closely? Did you have much experience with it? Did you know anything about it?
I knew what it was, and I knew that it came in lots of different forms. And my family has had run-ins with cancer a few times. So it had hit close to home. My grandma on my dad's side, she was diagnosed with cervical cancer, but she beat it. But then I lost my grandfather on my mum's side. He died from lung cancer, I'm pretty sure. Mm. So, yeah, like it's definitely been something that's been, you know, weaved into my family history. Mm. But, yeah.
And reading your interview with Birdie, you did have moles that your parents were always vigilantly getting checked.
Yeah. It's because my mum has quite a lot of moles too. And like, I think also when she moved to Australia when she was 16, it was like the sun is different here in this country. It is very different. So she was very adamant of being like, and she's very protective. This is something that, oh my God, if you ever met my mother, you'd know. Very protective. So ever since we were little, I was always that kid that was in a like full on long sleeve rashy that was like down to my ankles as well, with a hat with that gorgeous little flap at the back. But she had moles and she was very much adamant being like, well, we're going to make sure that you and your brother and your father, like, you're all checked. So, yeah.
Tell us about the time you were in Greece. Is that right?
Yeah.
Traveling Europe. Greece. How old were you?
I was 20.
So you're 20 and were you on one of those top
deck? I was on top deck.
Yeah,
I was on top deck.
You're a classic 20-year-old in Greece.
Yeah.
And when you realised that something wasn't quite right,
the
beginning of it all.
All I remember now is I remember waking up and we're on sleeping on sailboats. This is like complete 20-year-old top deck kind of moment. The night before, people were breathing fire, like from I don't even remember what.
Top 10.
Yeah. But I woke up the next morning and I just remember looking down at my legs and being like, why are my legs blue and yellow? And then I was like, I got my friend to count. I was like, these are bruises. I asked her, what did I do? I didn't drink the night before. So I was like, honest to God, I was like, did I sleepwalk? She was like, no. Like, I was outside the whole time, like sleeping on the lounge. You didn't come past me. And I was like, oh my God. So we took a photo, sent it to my dad, and then we counted them all. And I was like, Dad, I've got 52 bruises on my legs from like my kneecaps right down to my feet. And I remember my dad sending back a message at stupid o'clock Australian time being like, that isn't good. What did you do? And I was like, I didn't do anything. And then in my gut, for some reason, like, you know how your gut, it's there and it's very strong. My gut intuition was, it's my mole. Like, something is wrong. I just had that initial straight away, that link being like, okay.
So you had an existing mole on your toe.
I did.
And had it been given you, had it given you any kind of stress or anxiety?
It did. Like, I knew it was commonly large. Like, I was very much aware of it. So I was so proactive, even like in wintertime, if I was wearing sandals, to cover it with a Band-Aid, because I was just like, you never know, right? And it was quite large. So what happened is when I was in England, like a few weeks before Greece, what I'd noticed is when I was wearing a pair of sandals, the mole actually started to rub against the sandal. So like, it was growing. And I was like, that is not a good sign. Like, that's actually really scary. So I like made it kind of like a dot point in the back of my mind going like, as soon as I get home, I'm going to have to go get this checked again. Because I think I like recently got a check like 6 months before I left. So, yeah.
And what made you think in the moment these bruises on my legs must be connected to the mole?
Honest to God, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I attribute it to like my gut instinct, like just being like, probably because like I was aware that something was changing on the mole, that I thought, okay, this is all connected somehow. But I really don't. I think my gut was just preparing me for like what was about to come.
Yeah. So you get home to Australia, you go see your GP. After a few preliminary tests, he recommends going to an oncologist.
Yeah. So like within 3 days, it was GP, dermatologist, oncologist.
What's it like hearing that word? Dermatologist is one thing.
Yeah.
Oncologist is another. What was it like hearing you're going to an oncologist?
I just remember like seeing white, if that makes any sense. Like, I couldn't comprehend what was going on because I was like, it's just a mole. And I guess that was my naivety of not knowing to the full extent what melanoma could be. But yeah, it was, I just remember being lost. I've never been one to try and Google because I know I will freak myself out like most people would. So when it was like, you need to go see the oncologist, I remember looking at my mum, and my mum like lost her shit, and she obviously like being a mother was like, that's not a good thing, like that's scary.
Did she cry?
What? Yeah, and she's very emotional. So when we were told, I just remember her vividly being like shaken, full on like, yeah, this is really effing scary.
What's the conversation you have with your mum on the drive home from that doctor's appointment?
My mum was just like, we'll get through this, whatever it's going to be. But I think she was reassuring me that it wasn't going to be anything. Naturally, what any mother would do would just be like, this is just a preliminary thing. We're just going to get it checked. Nothing's going to happen.
And then something did happen.
And then something did happen, yeah.
Take us, if you can, to that moment when I imagine you were sitting in a doctor's office with your dad.
Yes, I was with my dad at this point.
And they said it's cancer and you're 20.
I didn't cry. I remember that really vividly. I think it was like in the space of a month from me coming back from Greece to them being in that doctor's office. But I didn't cry because I feel like I knew what it was straight away. Like in my gut, I had a feeling of being like, okay, shit's going to hit the fan, but you're going to make it through. So I didn't cry. But when she said, Natalie, you have cancer, the mole has elements of melanoma in it, I just remember like my sense of words and my sense of understanding of anything went out the window. Honest to God, any kind of sense of foundation or sense of who I was, because no one prepares you to hear those words. There is absolutely no kind of preparation for it. And I just remember not crying, just sitting there and then accepting all the information. I think I like didn't hear anything after she said those three words. My dad continued to talk to her. And then we walked out of that room And I remember fainting. That's it. And then my dad, and I saw it happen to me, which was really weird. Mm. Yeah. Out of body experience. My dad caught me and then I was fine. I was silent the whole way home in the car. And then I got into bed and I cried for a whole day straight.
What do you think in those moments? Are you thinking anything at all? Or are you thinking about death? Are you thinking about treatment? Are you thinking about, you know, actually feeling sick, which I think people forget that you'll feel sick.
Right.
And yeah. What are you thinking about?
Well, the thing is I didn't feel sick. That was the craziest thing, is because I didn't feel physically ill. When you think about death, probably a lot of people would have this kind of understanding. You know how like your tummy falls out of itself? I had that. And I had that to the point where I couldn't breathe. And I knew I had to give myself that day in bed of being like, I needed to explore all the options. Call it processing, call it whatever you want to call it. But I needed to like come to terms with the fact that I could die. And at 20, that's huge. At 20, that's something you never want to think of, but
especially
I had to.
A 20-year-old who's just been on top deck living the best life in Europe to then come home to that kind of news.
Yeah, it was, I can't even think of a word to describe it. Like, it was insane.
In your interview with Lisa for Birdie, one of the things that really struck me was your quote about saying, at 20 and you're diagnosed with cancer, you are technically an adult, and by all standards in the world, you're an adult, and in that moment you feel like a child and you're sort of in this weird kind of no man's land where you're not a child, you're not a fully fledged adult, and you sort of realize that you're completely dependent on your parents to carry you through. How was it like with your parents at that time? Did you feel guilt?
Oh, I had an immense amount of guilt. I had this huge F me moment being like, I have dragged every single one of my family into a shitstorm. And owning that sense of responsibility and guilt, it's something I still haven't come to terms with today. I constantly have this guilty cloud following me around because it's like, I'll always be that sick person and I can never get rid of that label, and I'm still coming to terms with that. But it is what it is. Yeah, it's just crazy.
Because you grew up as a sick kid, didn't you?
Yeah, I
did. That you had swine flu at one point. And what else was it?
Mycoplasma pneumonia.
Yeah.
I was, a sick kid. And maybe that set up my immune system being so crappy for what came later. But in year 10 especially, I had nearly a whole term roundabout on and off school because I was just like constantly ill. Yeah. And yeah, we never thought anything else of it.
It's hard to grow up with that label. I grew up as a sick kid as well, not to the level of you, but it is a weird label to carry around because you do feel like a burden, or
you
feel sensitive or something, that people want to wrap you in cotton wool.
Yeah. And you also get referred to as being strong, or like you're really like, you know, inspiring. And I love that I am to those people. But you kind of just got to do what you got to do. Mm. Like if anyone were given my set of cards, I feel like you would be the strongest you could possibly be because you want to fight, right? Mm. You want to live. So,
So walk us through. You get the diagnosis that it is stage 3 melanoma because it spread to your lymph nodes.
Yes, spread
correct?
To the lymph nodes, yep.
What happens then?
Well, from then on, it was kind of like you need major surgery because immunotherapy didn't exist back then. It was still in its trial stages where very little people were able to actually have access to it. So it was a sit down with my oncologist and she was like, so what we're going to do is we're going to cut open your leg in your groin and we're going to take out every single lymph node in there. I didn't know what that meant at the time. I really didn't. I just was kind of like, just take out what you need, just get rid of it. And then she also said to me, it's up to you, but we would like to take your toe. And I remember thinking, okay.
Like, fuck no. I
was like, wait, are you like, yes, take the toe, like whatever you need? Or like, wait, I want my toes.
I was so confused because I was like, why do you need to take the toe? Because you've already taken the mole. And then she goes, because cancer is so fucking finicky, there is no way that we can ever guarantee whether we've taken the whole thing or not. And when you look at a toe or a finger, there's not much skin there, right? There's not nothing. So if they missed it by 1 centimeter, that's it, right? We went through all of that for nothing. And so I remember asking my one friend who was studying to become a doctor. I was like, I had no idea who to turn to. I was like, who do I like talk to about making a decision like, let's amputate a part of my body? And it was at one of my best friend's 21st, and I cornered him, and I was like, okay, I need...
Oh my God, Natalie. It was I'm just imagining the scenario.
It was crazy. My best friend was, turning 21. Sorry, Bronte, if you're listening. And I had captured this... He's called Tom. I captured him in the corner and just been like, what's happening? What do I do?
I need your medical advice after you've definitely had a few cruises. Yeah.
Quite literally. Yeah. And he was, not even qualified yet. And he just looked at me. And he's just said to me dead on, and I will always be grateful for this. He was just like, take it. Yeah. He was like, you've got nothing to lose. It's a toe at the end
except
of the day.
Except for a toe.
Except for a toe. But at the end of the day, it's a toe. It's not a whole limb. You can still walk. It's fine. And I literally based my decision of what he told me, not what my mom or my dad. I literally was like, what's a medical opinion of someone who's not even a doctor? But I took it.
What were your mom and dad telling you?
Oh, my God. My dad... And my mum, I think they both were just like, do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Just whatever you feel comfortable with. Because I think as a parent, telling a child to make a huge decision like that, it's just, especially because I wasn't a child, but I was. Mm. So it was just a really difficult terrain to navigate. So I think they were just like, we'll be comfortable with whatever you choose. So yeah, then I went and asked my friend.
Friendship is an interesting one.
Oh, yeah.
In this scenario. I have a couple of questions on it. The first is, how do you tell friends at 20? Is it an Instagram post? Is it a WhatsApp message?
It was a group message. It was a group text message. So I couldn't even say it out loud. I honest to God could not. I sent a group message. Everyone knew that something was up because I'd previously been walking on crutches 2 weeks prior because I'd just had them all taken out. So we didn't know officially if it was yet. So everyone knew okay, something's going on with Natalie. But then once I got the results, everyone knew that day that I was having the appointment too. So I had all these messages coming in being like, what's the update? What's the update? What's the update? And I was just like, I can't fucking talk to you. I don't know what to say. I had this huge moment of being like, I didn't even want to tell my own mum because my mum wasn't with me at the appointment. She was working. And I shut down. And so I knew I had to say something. So I just got all my closest friends in one message and I just said, guys, it's come back as cancer. I'll talk to you when I can. It was really short, really brief. Didn't want to talk to anybody. And then, of course, naturally my phone went crazy afterwards, but I just turned it off and put it away. But yeah, it was a group message. It was, and that was it.
How does it change? How does that diagnosis change the nature of your friendships at that age? What have you noticed in the last 4 or 5 years?
Well, cancer changes everything. The one thing that I commonly say is that having cancer is also being how can I say this? You kind of become the disease. And I know that sounds horrible, but it gets into every single nook and cranny of your life, places that you don't even think about. So with friendships, it destroyed them. And I'm not going to lie, plain and simple, there were friends who were there who just simply did not show up. But that's not their fault. And I want them to know that, it's a big thing to be there for someone who is not terminally ill, but could be terminally ill or has a chronic illness or is diagnosed with stage 3 cancer. Friendships can fall apart, and that's just the way it is. Because some people just can't handle it, and that's okay.
So young people might be listening to this and they might have a friend who is sick or know people in their life that is sick and they feel like they don't know what to do. Yeah. What is a way to show up? What did you appreciate from your friends in those moments?
I appreciate it just being talked to normally. Honest to God, not even just being how's treatment, but just being how was your day? Or if they just drop by the house being I was just thinking of you. Do you want to go out for coffee? Honest to God, normality. That's all someone's asking for. If it's their mum who's sick, they just want normality. They want that sense of okay, something huge has changed, but you want every other kind of puzzle piece to remain the same.
Coming up after the break, the love story of Natalie and Alexander and why we need to think twice about the tanning content we put on Instagram. But first, a bit of a different break to hear about a cause that's very close to my and Zara's hearts.
Zara, Call Time on Melanoma is a not-for-profit initiative for sun-safe women, blowing the whistle on melanoma mythology and serving you sun safety as sun care.
That is absolutely right. And what we wanted to do in this little episode break of the show is donate the episode to the cause, because we wanted to help spread the word, because we have, like we keep saying, been incredibly inspired by Natalie Fornasia and Lisa Batulmi, who also created the Call Time on Melanoma initiative.
Exactly. And if we can forego a sponsor for one episode to spread the word, that's exactly what we want to do. So for those unaware, melanoma is the third most common cancer in Australian women. So suntanning is not safe. We know that. We know that we need to be wearing more sunscreen and we need to be covering up more. So Call Time on Melanoma gives you that information, which I really, really love. If you go onto their website, they've actually got a list of beauty editor approved sunscreen recommendations and self-care strategies as well.
I don't think we can stress enough though, and I know we hear this all the time, that there's nothing healthy about a tan, but I still think we live in this weirdly warped Australian culture where we still feel healthier if we've got colour on our skin. But suntanning, like we keep saying, isn't safe. Natalie Fornasia is spearheading with Lisa Batulmi this movement, and we can't push you to go on their website enough. Tell your friends, follow their Instagram. It's at Call Time on Melanoma, and spread the fucking word.
Yeah. Do you want to quickly talk about how you've changed your attitude towards tanning as well? Because I think it's a big part of Shameless and the community that we've built, and I guess a dialogue that we constantly have around sun tanning.
Totally. So I wrote about this in the newsletter this morning, but I have a strange relationship with tanning because I've grown up by the beach my whole life, and the beach has been a fundamental part of my childhood, my adolescence. It's been a fundamental part in calming my mind. Whenever I'm stressed, I go to the beach. I spend a lot of time in the sun, and I spent a lot of time over the years getting a tan. And then when I read this story on Birdie at the end of last year, I said to you, I think we should really do a segment about this. This is really starting to change my perspective on tanning. My New Year's resolution was to stay out of the sun. It sounds so frivolous, but it was really important to me. And you can't avoid the sun, but I haven't been unprotected or uncovered in the sun since the moment I read that article. I still firmly think that there won't be a day where that will change, and I'm forever married to my fake tan.
Absolutely. And guys, if you're listening to this episode and you're affected by Natalie's story as much as Zara and I have been, please come into the Facebook group or come tell us on Instagram. Let's share our stories. Let's tell our friends about this. I think the best way to get the word out about Call Time on Melanoma is to actually tell people about it. Go follow them, tag your friends in their posts, tag your friends in the post on our Instagram feed talking about this episode. The more we can get this out there and get Natalie's message across, the better. We want to do whatever we can with the Shameless community to spread that.
And I think the way that we do that is we make sure that the conversations around tanning is that it's not cool to have a tan. Like, let's change our perspective a little and a lot to ensure that all of us stop tanning no matter the season.
Let's get back to Natalie. It feels from the outside that cancer has been a really defining time, not only in your life, but also with your relationships, and that you have had some friendships fall away and you've probably had some strengthened, but you've also fallen in love.
I know, which is just crazy.
Can you tell us about love and about your relationship with Alexander?
Okay, so I was diagnosed first in 2014, and I had dated a few boys before and after that. But it was never anything to the point where it was like, you know, oh, this is going to be a relationship, because I was petrified. Like, I, honest to God, thought I would never fall in love, because it is a huge thing to take on. And because what you need to also acknowledge is that with cancer, it's never fully gone, as we now know now, but it can come back. And that is something that I feel like, especially like with young men, it was hard for them to wrap their heads around. And some that I would talk to or, you know, go out on a date with, they couldn't emotionally see past it. But I felt like it was my responsibility to say, look, this is my life. I wasn't going to hide it. I didn't feel that that was true to myself, because it's my life now. I have lymphedema. You can see it. It's there. I go to hospital all the bloody time. It's not something I can hide. So when Alexander did come along, and it got to that stage where it was like, I'm falling in love with him and like, we need to have a really big conversation, he was the angel that I was waiting for, as my parents now say. He took it all in, and I remember we were both sitting on a bed in Venice. We met in exchange, by the way. And we were sitting there and I talked for, I think, 2 hours. I just had so much to say. And not once did he interrupt me. Not once did he go like, oh, but why this or whatever. And then after I'd finished speaking, he grabbed my face and he just goes, I'm not going to go anywhere. He didn't see it as a hurdle. He saw it as something that he was like, well, that's a part of you and I acknowledge that and I'm going to start crying.
I'm going to start crying. Oh, God, you guys are, because I went a long time ago.
He just looked at me in a way where I, honest to God, felt like I was just a normal person.
I was going to say that. Was it one of the first times in the entire experience that you felt you were uncomplicated?
Exactly. I was uncomplicated. I wasn't this gigantic mess of a person that had so many responsibilities or huge weighted shoulders. He just made me feel like a normal person. And honest to God, he's the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Can you tell us about him? What do you like about him?
Tell us.
He is so German, and he'd hate me for saying that, but he is. He's a stickler for time. He is the most understanding human you will ever meet, and he is so personable. He will get along with everyone and anyone. He's warm, funny, loving. He's making me fat because he loves to cook. Yeah. But, like, he truly loves to cook, and every day he tells me, oh, I'm so lucky that I have you, because he wishes he was Italian. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh my God, I'm going to marry an Italian. Like, that's my life goal. And I'm like, I love you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're in your early 20s and that cancer comes along, and like we've touched on already, there are a lot of things going through your mind. At what point do you exercise the thought that fertility is a part of this conversation?
Yeah. So when I told Alexander my past, right? So, because at this point, we didn't know it'd come back yet.
How old are you at this point?
When we met, I was 23, turning 24.
Right.
So just, yeah. So about a year ago. And I sat down, had the conversation with him, and I had to say to him, look, babies are something that I want, and he wants them too. But at that point, we didn't know that it was going to be a potential challenge. So he was very much aware of what could happen and what could not, because I could have had them perfectly fine. If I didn't get diagnosed a second time, it actually wouldn't have been a problem. Like, I would have been able to carry XYZ. But lymphedema presents a challenge in itself, because with my leg being swollen, your whole body swells when you're pregnant anyway, and that can be something that you have to monitor and can just be a complete nightmare, but it is doable. But now, with me being diagnosed a second time and I'm on treatment, having babies is just proving to be a constant kind of, we don't know if this is actually going to be a thing. And I want to be a mum. Like, that is just something that I crave. And so when the doctors were like, we don't have enough information to say as to whether you'll actually be able to have a kid later, I just remember going, like, I wasn't obviously thinking of it, because I'm not thinking about babies when I'm just being told every other thing. But I just remember thinking, fuck, you can't take this from me again, because I've already had a scare once. You can't tell me that I can't have kids again. But I just got told the other week that I have to go on hormone therapy, because immunotherapy is currently killing the glands in my body. So there's a pituitary gland in your brain, and it's the, like, master and command of all the glands. Immunotherapy can't distinguish between what's good and what's bad, like antibiotics. It's killing that gland, and slowly my thyroid is starting to die. So I'm on hormone therapy, which they say I have to be on it for the rest of my life. You can't breastfeed when you're on hormone therapy. We don't know if I'll actually be able to carry a baby because of immunotherapy attacking everything. Immunotherapy at one point can even attack my own ovaries. Mm. So I remember being in this endocrinologist's office and him breathing a freaking, like, sigh of relief when I said I'd had IVF. Because he was just like, well, thank God, because you're a case where we just have no idea. Because a lot of people who are in my boat, I would say, they're a lot older. A lot of them have already had kids. And so when Alexander and I got to the point where it was like, do I have IVF or not? Obviously, I said yes, because we just didn't know. And I had this whole moment of being like, how weird is it that we're talking about babies? We haven't even been dating for 6 months. And I was like, okay, so I'm going to sign over my unborn babies to you right now. Like, here you go, have them. And he's a champion, and he was just like, okay, we'll just do it. Because he and I have come to this point, like, we're such a team where it's just like, okay, if we can't have the baby myself, like, I can't carry it. He goes, well, we're still going to fucking have a baby of our own. So no matter how we're going to make it happen, we will. And some of my friends have even been like, I'll carry for you. So that's cool.
Can you explain how it works? Are you still doing long distance with each other?
So he goes home. Australia's got this visa where it's like he was on a holiday visa first, so you don't have to work or anything, but you need to leave the country every 3 months.
Fine.
So he would come to Australia and then spend 3 months here and then go home for 6 weeks and then come back for 3 months. So we've been doing that because he doesn't want to leave me alone because everything's a bit volatile. Like, it's only been about, like, not even a year yet since I've been diagnosed. So he does the backwards and forwards, and then he's just applied for a working visa now. So hopefully when he comes back, he'll be back in like 2 weeks. He'll come in on a 6-month working visa, so he doesn't actually have to leave the country. The poor thing is so tired of flying. Aww. He's just like, oh my God, another fucking 24-hour flight to go. And I was like, I'm so sorry.
So take us to the point when you felt like you had beaten cancer, but as you said, you can never really beat it because it's always somewhere, probably lying dormant, potentially going to resurface again.
Yep.
What's it like to be told, yeah, it's back?
This time I was really fucking angry. It was a whole new sense of, I'd already closed this door, right? I'd like put the fucking padlock on it, like throwing the key away. I was like, all right, I'm just going to live with the aftermath of it. But now that it had like resurfaced, it was this rage because I had now a relationship to think about. I had this whole kind of, I felt like, what was the fucking point of the past 4 years? Why? So when it came back, I was just so mad at myself. And this is something that I really still can't wrap my head around. It's just like, you get so angry at your own body, right? And you think you have control over what's going inside of you. Like, you're like, all right, I don't smoke. I like eat really healthy. I exercise. Sometimes it just means fuck all.
It's interesting that you say that because that's a question I wanted to ask at the very start when you're talking about how your mum sort of protected you from the sun in such sort of extreme lengths. Did you ever just want to shout at the world, this wasn't my doing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And yeah, there was like an article that was put out. I did an interview for someone and they put the headline as "Don't make my mistake."
Oh,
and I lost my shit. And
what mistake? What mistake?
It wasn't
was
a mistake.
So it was a clickbait.
No, I know it was in a paper. It wasn't clickbait. It was just, and I like emailed the editor and being like, what is this? You and I had a really lovely conversation. Like, I thought we were doing something good here. And she goes, my sub editor changed it. And I just remember being so effing mad. But yeah, it's so hard when I didn't do this to myself. Like, and this is why I'm so passionate about trying to change the conversation around sun safety, because you do have some kind of power over your health. And I guess that's just what I want people to realize, is because I didn't have any over mine. But if you have a little bit, something, if you can protect yourself like a normal human being, you can probably protect yourself from God knows what's coming.
With that birdie profile was the launch, or what I thought was the launch of Call Time a Melanoma.
Yep.
What's behind that? I think you just touched on it then, but it's a pretty big deal, I think, to be a normal woman other than this sickness in your life and feel a responsibility to, I don't know, almost have a call to arms or enact change and try and get people talking and educating people. What's in it? What is it that makes you want to do that? Because it is so great.
Yeah. Thank you. I guess what makes me want to do it is that I just get so fired up now, especially in the age of Instagram influencers and like everybody posting everything on social media, Australian summer. I just get so fired up that people just don't take care of themselves. It's just as basic as that. And so when Lisa messaged me and was like, would you be happy doing this and being a face of something that I'll create? I was so on board because I was like, if I can change or stop one person from doing something and changing their life and like, you know, potentially stopping them from getting cancer, like, then I guess in a way it allowed me to change my own narrative. And that's what Lisa's let me do.
Do you feel empowered? I think it sounds like you took hit after hit after hit in those doctor's appointments, and now you can control something.
Yeah, it's regaining control, and I feel so empowered. I've been given the chance to rewrite how cancer has affected my life.
Yeah.
And I will go in with this all guns blazing.
Yeah. And to the women listening to this, how can they get behind Call Time on Melanoma?
Follow us on Instagram, and pretty much we'll have our website and everything coming up hopefully later this year. But it's the basic kind of principles behind sun protection is all I'm going to say, is that if you value your skin, which you should because it's the largest organ on your body, protect it at all costs. Because melanoma is the highest, I think, what is it? Like, it's got the highest numbers of cancer in young people in Australia. Mm-hmm. When you look into the statistics, it's actually frightening. And the thing is melanoma, it can be there for a little while. And that's the thing, is like, if you don't get your skin checked regularly, you're never going to know if there's something you need to keep an eye on or not. So it's just protect yourself from the sun. That's it.
We have probably thousands of young Australian women, and I think there's something interesting about Australia, about the fetishization of a tan. And it's interesting how, particularly in this Instagram age, it is a sign of hotness, I guess, because we glorify it. What do you want those young Australian women to know and to do? Obviously we're talking about sun protection here, but I mean, we probably, when this goes live, it's going to be winter, but I imagine there's going to be a whole host of people going on holidays and wanting to get in their bathers and wanting to upload those tanning photos. What do you want them to know?
That sun safety is paramount. It doesn't matter if we're in winter. It doesn't matter if we're in summer. The sun in Australia can affect you all year round. And for those young women, it's that having a tan doesn't make you the most popular, coolest person that I guess Australian tanning culture is trying to promote to you.
What about influencers who are hopping on their Instagram stories lathered in tanning oil?
That just makes me so mad. Lisa and I, we're very, very, very anti any influencer who promotes a tanning oil, because a tanning oil is a beauty loophole. So pretty much it can like bypass the like sunscreen thing.
Yeah. So the TGA considers sunscreen as medicine, I think it is, or it's something like medicine, whereas beauty tanning oils skip and bypass the TGA
regulations. Yeah. And it is infuriating. I don't know how influencers can feel comfortable knowing they're promoting products that literally promote skin cancer. Like, I just cannot wrap my head around it.
Yeah. I think particularly because it's often wellness influencers. It is. Who one second will be like, wellness is meditating and wearing a, skin mask.
This whole obsession that having a tan is healthy, being sun-kissed and all of that, that the language around tanning is horrible, especially for young girls, because they are so impressionable. And we don't have enough people out there saying being your normal skin color is just fine. Mm. Like, being pale is beautiful. Just, we as women particularly, we always excuse ourselves if we're like, a friend's just come to the house, where I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't have any makeup on. Like, we're always like trying to better ourselves, which is just, we've really got to try and work on not doing that, just embracing who we are. I understand that people want to have a tan. Great, but get out of a fucking can. Like, honestly.
I mean, it makes you smell, as you can probably smell from here, but it works.
Be more like Zara.
Yes, just get it out of a can. Oh, my God. Do not go bake yourself in the sun. It's not worth it. You are, like, heightening your chances of melanoma by more than 50% by going out in the sun for 1 hour without sun protection. It's just insane. And once you look into all the statistics and everything else, you're just like, how are women doing this to themselves? I know women who are obsessed with skincare, yet the last thing they'll ever do is wear SPF. And I'm like, if I can't appeal to you by, like, you know,
just wrinkles.
Like, wrinkles, right? I'm going to appeal to you because you can fucking age faster if you don't put SPF on, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Natalie, I'm sure so many people listening to this right now thinking, I want an update on how the situation is now. We know that you've been re-diagnosed.
Yes.
And it's come back. Can you just give a synopsis of what you're looking at.
Okay, so to this day, I am still classified as stage 4 melanoma in my lungs. It's not there actively, but they say that the tumours are now considered scar tissue, but we are not sure about the lymph nodes that are right next to it, because lymph nodes can get smaller and bigger on treatment, XYZ anyway. But it's still potentially there. It also is not. The only way we'll find out is if we stick a needle in me, but I'm not very keen on doing that at the moment. But everything's going really well. Treatment is going well. I'm responsive to treatment. There are complications to treatment, which is the hormone therapy at the moment. But apart from that, if you look at me, I look freaking healthy. So.
And your eyebrows are on point. As I said, when you walked in, I was like, what are you doing with your eyebrows? They look amazing.
Thank you. But yeah, it's just a simple thing. Is also what you can take away, I guess, from this is that everyone you bypass in the street is going through something. If you look at me, you would not have a clue that I have stage 4 cancer. Not a clue. And so I guess one takeaway, if anything, from that you're listening to me talk right now, just be nice to people. Mm. It costs nothing to be nice. So, yeah.
Natalie, thank you so much, not just for coming today, but for doing all this work with Call Time on Melanoma. I can't tell you how many perspectives you are changing. Like, I don't think this is a conversation we've actually properly had in Australia, particularly amongst young women yet. So I am personally so thankful that thank you have you. Come on here. And also, I think it's time we start a petition to get Alexandra a citizenship or something.
Yeah. Are you going to cry?
Oh, maybe.
It takes... Oh, actually, it doesn't take that much to get Zara to cry at the moment. But no, thank you. You've influenced us a lot.
Thank you.
Like, I'm getting emotional now.
Oh, but you have. I love you guys so much. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us for this very special episode of Shameless. If you would like to get behind Call Time on Melanoma, follow them on Instagram. They're at Call Time on Melanoma, or visit their website, www.calltimeonmelanoma.com.au. More than that though, guys, send your friends this episode, buy some Factor 50 sunscreen, look out for each other, protect your skin, cover up. If you want to support Shameless, all we can ask is that you click that big purple subscribe button on the Apple Podcast feed or wherever you can subscribe in your podcast app. We will be back in your ears on Monday.